Here we go. When I meet people for the first time, I like to ask them, tell me three things I don't know about you. Well, imagine meeting someone who answers that one, he served his country as a Force Recon Marine. Two, he was a professional MMA world champion, that's mixed martial arts. And three, he now runs a foundation to help veterans with PTSD. That is someone I would definitely want to spend some time talking to, and that is exactly what we're going to do today. I think you'll be inspired by our guest here as part of our focus on Military Appreciation Month. Hi, I'm Stuart Shepherd, and if this is your first time watching us, just take a moment, if you would, please, on FirstLibertyLive.com to click on the big blue subscribe button up at the top of the screen there, and also remember to share it with one of your loved ones while you're at it. Our guest today is Chad Robichaux. Hi, Chad. How you doing?
Hey, Stuart, how are you? Nice to be on with you.
I'm good. Thank you for making some time for us today. Appreciate you being here. Hey, let's start by getting the quick version. I know there's a 45-minute version. I want to get the quick version of your life story, okay? So tell us a little bit about your military career. How did that happen, and what did it mean to you?
Yeah, well, very blessed to be part of a multi-generation Marine Corps family. My father was a Marine who served in Vietnam as an infantryman. I served as a Force Reconnaissance Marine in Special Operations, as you mentioned, and did 8 deployments to Afghanistan. And both my sons are Marines. One actually went to Afghanistan himself, which was pretty crazy for me, having a son serving the same conflict that I did. Yeah. But my family and I, have faced head on what many of our military warriors deal with today. Anxiety, depression, just frustration from multiple deployments, and coming home after my 8th deployment, was diagnosed with PTSD, and dealt with all the symptoms that many of our warriors coming home deal with. Almost a divorce in my family after a three-year downward spiral, and the culminating moment was me attempting to take my life. Veteran suicide rate is over 20 a day still. The active duty suicide rates in the last year have went up 35% because of lockdowns and things like that. And me and my family dealt with that head on. I found myself separated from my family, facing a divorce, living alone in an apartment, and I had a Glock 22 pistol, and I made a decision that I really came to this conclusion that my family might be sad without me, but they would be better off. All the things that I had put them through, that they endured, I really saw myself as a problem, as a burden to them, and thought, they would be sad, but it would be a better choice for them.
Here's a question for you. When you're in the middle of that, in that darkest of days, are you self-aware of what's happening, or do you think this is just how life is and nothing can ever change?
Well, for me at that moment, I had tied my whole life into being, I'm in the Marine Corps and I was 17 years old. I made it my first year into Special Operations to become a Recon Marine. I worked really hard to go from Recon to Force Recon. And then I had this opportunity to try out for a JSOC Task Force. And
so it's let me jump in there for a second, because our people are not all military. So explain just briefly what Force Recon means when you're in the Force Recon part of the Marines.
Well, of course, as Marines and in the Special Operations in the Marines, they're both Marine Recon and MARSOC. And I went the Marine Recon route, because that was available at my time. Yeah. And then when you go from Recon to Force Recon, that's like a next level up. It's like the premier units within the Recon unit. So it's more specialized.
So what are you doing then as part of that job?
Well, as a Force Recon Marine, you're the eyes and ears on the battlefield for the division commanders and the Marine Corps as a entity. You go out in small 6-man teams and you do all the forward reconnaissance to gather battlefield intelligence to make, critical battlefield decisions. You do things like, also capture, kill high value targets. Yeah. And do, more of the, specialized operations. You're certified as a combat scuba diver. You're a free fall parachutist. So you're jumping, doing jumps, like crazy jumps at 36,000 feet and in the middle of the night with your five other guys in your team and you're really working remotely. It's an amazing job.
There's a phrase, the tip of the spear. You were like the molecules on the very tip of the spear.
Yeah, I mean, Force Recon and Recon units definitely pride themselves on being the very tip of the spear. You have on the battlefield what's called the FEBA, the forward edge of the battle area. Yeah, it means that's the kind of our line in the sand, and Force Recon operates beyond the FEBA. And so that's something we definitely pride ourselves in. you know, and that's, operations were.
And that's a high-stress area, so it makes sense then that you're carrying a lot of anxiety and stress being out there in a small team on your own, apart from way beyond the wire. I mean, you're so far out, you are very much operating independently out there. And people often use the term special ops. This really is a special ops detail as well, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just, you know, Force Recon operations are special operations as you could get. And beyond that, and after 9/11, I tried out for what's called a JAS task force, which would be the, in JSOC, you have two of the tier one most premier special operations units. So the very best of the best of the best guys get there. I was extremely privileged to go on this JSOC task force, which has the highest level operations in, at the time, in Iraq, Afghanistan. And that's the command that I spent my 8 deployments in Afghanistan with. And so doing the, you know, working with the most incredible human beings you could ever imagine in special operations, having privilege to work with those guys and operate in that capacity. And it was just absolutely incredible. But while it was an incredible privilege to do that, it comes with a lot of stress, anxiety, and there's a lot of consequences to operating, particularly that many, you know, that much time overseas doing that job.
Yeah.
And so for me, like, when you asked about what was going on in my mind, why would I have been at a point to where I want to take my life? I mean, I had spent my whole life investing into being this as high-level special operations as I could, and I made it. I made it there, and my identity was so wrapped into doing that job that when I was diagnosed with PTSD and removed from doing my job, I felt like I lost everything. I lost my identity. I lost my worth. I lost my purpose, which is, you know, a huge problem in the military and outside the military, just in life, when people wrap the identity inside of a job. Because a job like I had is a great job. It's something to be proud of and something you should feel privileged to do. But yeah, when your identity is tied to that, it's very dangerous, because when it gets pulled away from you, you know, you could cause you to crumble. And that's what happened in with me.
Now, we're sitting here talking today, so clearly there was a turning point. Tell me about what happened. How did you get from that darkest day to this day?
Well, my wife knew I was having a particularly bad day. We had got an argument over the phone. We were separated, and she lived in her own apartment. I lived in mine. We had filed for divorce. We were, sold our home. And so she came to my apartment to check on me. And when she did, I was in my closet. I had my family pictures on the floor, and I had a, you know, Glock 22 pistol. I was intending to take my life, and I heard her voice. I heard a knock on the door, and I wasn't going to answer the knock because, you know, I was just going to ignore it. But when I heard her voice, I actually hid that pistol under blanket. Even though it was my closet, she would have never came in there. I hid it under blankets, some blankets, like I was ashamed. Yeah. I answered the door, and I got in this really aggressive argument with her. I was just irritated that she was there. You know, she was kind of intervening. And in the middle of the argument, she asked me a question that, you know, radically changed my life. She asked me how I could do everything I did in the Marine Corps. We met when we were 17 and 18 years old. So she saw me become a recon Marine and train for these deployments and do all these crazy stuff that we did in Afghanistan. And she saw me as a professional fighter, like train for these fights and cut weight and the discipline it took to, you know, win a world title and all these things. She saw the discipline in my life. She's like, how could you do all of that? And when it comes to your family, you'll quit.
Wow.
And that question for me just radically impacted me, because probably the most soul cutting word in my life would be to be called a quitter. But she was absolutely right. I've been successful at professional things in my life. When it came to the most important things, being a husband, being a father, being a, you know, young 17-year-old kid that raised his hand and made an oath to do something important for our country, for the Marine Corps, for myself, I had quit on all those things, including my own will to live. And so in that moment, I made a radical decision that I was going to take that same work ethic, discipline, the things that she saw in me, and I was going to turn around and try to fix these problems in my life.
The first step? The first step on that journey?
I think the first step for me was realizing, one, I couldn't do it alone, and two, I couldn't do it with the people I'd surrounded myself by. I was at that time, you know, I just won a world title. I had a big martial arts gym as a professional fighter. A lot of people told me everything I wanted to hear and not what I needed to hear. And I had systematically pushed accountability out of my life. So I knew I needed accountability. And you know, my life, my decision process in that point had nothing to do with faith. but I knew that my wife was going to this church with some really good people there. So I asked her, is there a man at your church that could help meet with me and hold me accountable to kind of putting my life back on track? Yeah. So I met with a man named Steve Toth at a Starbucks coffee shop. Steve had never been in the military. He wasn't an MMA fighter or anything like that. He was an elder on call at the church, small business owner in our community. And when I met with him, I had literally written a 5-paragraph order for the military guys listening. It's like an operational order of how to do a mission, you know? Yeah. Written in a paper of how it's gonna fix my life. It was really good. I was really proud of it. And I wanted to show it to this guy so he could show it to my wife so I could win her back. When I put it on the table at Starbucks and slid it over to him, he didn't even read it. He slid it back over to me and told me I was gonna fail. My reaction was like, what a jerk. Like, he didn't even look at my plan. And he tapped on that paper and he said, if this plan doesn't have anything to do with your relationship with God, I'm not going to waste your time and I'm not going to let you waste mine. And at that point in my life, Stuart, I had been on medication. I had been through all the VA programs. I had been through just some intensive counseling. I had professional success. I had financial success. All those things, some good things, some bad things. Of all those things, my situation never changed. In a work I do at Mighty Oaks Foundation, we have a saying that kind of comes from this moment. The saying is, if what you're doing isn't working, then why not try something different?
Yeah, and we'll talk about Mighty Oaks at some length here coming up, but carry on with the story.
I would just say everything in my life that I tried at that time didn't work, and it was time for me to try something different. And so I made a decision to trust this man, Steve. I made a faith profession, surrender my life to Christ. At the time, really, to be honest with you, I didn't even really know what it meant. I just knew I needed something different. And beyond that decision, Steve mentored me for an entire year in biblical manhood and biblical living. And this may sound kind of cliche, but what I realized through that process is that I didn't have to let my past define my future. I realized that all these bad things that happened to me, you know, losing friends in Afghanistan, I had a horrific childhood, like all these bad things that happened to me, as bad as those things were, those things did not lead me to be in that closet with my pistol in my hand. What led me there were the choices I made in response to these things. And I had never lost control of the ability to choose differently moving forward. And so Steve began to show me through kind of biblical principles, when I dealt with these things, this anxiety, depression, anger, all these things, when I dealt with these things, how to make the right decisions moving forward. And so I was very intentional and all in about doing that in my life and making some intentional changes in my life and choosing differently. And through that process, I began to find restoration in my marriage, in my family, in my own brokenness and this PTSD thing. I found hope for the first time in a very long time. And ultimately, I found what I think I wanted and needed most in my life, and that's purpose. Mark Twain has one of my favorite quotes. He says, the two most important days in a person's life is the day that they're born and the day they find out why. And I believe when Steve Toth introduced me to the life that God created me to live, I found out the why for me. And it was beyond, you know, anything. It was beyond being in a uniform or anything like that. I actually refound my purpose again, my identity again. And it was sharing what I had discovered with others who were dealing with the same things that I had dealt with.
And then my understanding is you wanted to share that hope and that reason for living with others, because there are many other veterans who know your life story all too well. They're living it right now, and you decided to reach out to them. Tell us about the Mighty Oaks Foundation. What's it all about?
Well, you know, coming on the other side of this, I realized I wasn't the only one. Like you said, there's so many other people struggling, and I believe God put a deep burden on my heart to share what I had discovered. It was like if I was dying of cancer and Steve Toth gave me the cure. I didn't want to share it. I felt obligated to share it. And I didn't know how. I never ran a nonprofit. I had an MBA, but I never ran a nonprofit. At the time I was a professional fighter. You know, guy who just came out of like 8 tours in Afghanistan. So, you know, how do I start a nonprofit? And I'm so thankful that even though I didn't know how to do it, that I was obedient to that burden that God put on my heart, because God brought all the right people around us. 10 years later, if I could fast forward 10 years later, what we do today has been just an incredible work for our military, active duty service members, our veterans, the spouses, and we've been helping first responders. We do a couple of different things. We do a resiliency program, and in the last 10 years, I've been able to go speak to active duty troops at bases around the world and talk about suicide, talk about divorce, combat readiness, resiliency, spiritual resiliency. The Marine Corps Boot Camp lets me go speak to all the recruits coming through Marine Corps Boot Camp by spiritual resiliency. I've spoken to 150,000 active duty troops doing this. I've given away over 100,000 copies of my books. at Marine Corps Boot Camp, I get to give away a book called The Path to Resiliency, which is about spiritual resiliency. Yeah. To help equip these young warriors on the front end so they don't have to decide on the back end like I did. The other thing we do is a recovery program. And we have a recovery, it's called a legacy program. We have 5 ranches around the country that active duty military warriors, veterans, and spouses go to. And they're with us for a 6-day non-clinical, faith-based, peer-to-peer mentoring program, followed on by however long it takes aftercare. And we bring them to our ranches. We pay for everything, including their travel. They pay for nothing at all. And we've had 4,000 graduates from that program. And even though we did 4,000 in the last 10 years, we're doing 1,000 per year right now moving forward.
Wow.
So we've had a lot of exponential growth with just amazing team and staff and a grateful nation of people who pay for these people to go. The last thing we do.
Go ahead. No, you're good. Go ahead. Finish.
I'll say the last thing we do is I have been really involved in advocating for faith-based care within the VA and DOD. And I've worked a lot with President Trump's administration to work on a faith-based policy. Because in 2009, President Obama signed and repealed the Faith and Opportunity Initiative that President Bush had put in place. He removed that, taking faith-based programs out of the VA and DOD. In 2016, I got to ask candidate Trump if he would, in person, I got to ask him if he would overturn that. He promised me he would. He did, and then I was appointed as the chairman of the faith-based Veterans Alliance out of the White House, and really worked on faith-based policy. Based on the evidence that we have of success stories at Mighty Oaks Foundation.
There are people out there who are actively working to try to remove all expressions of faith from the military. There are groups that are devoted basically to that outcome. Describe for me why faith is such an important part of the lives of so many service members and why you feel they should have access to that if they choose to, that it should be something that's at least within reach.
That's the most important thing. They should have the choice. When a veteran serves their country and fights for the freedoms of each and every American, they deserve to come home to those freedoms themselves. They should be able to choose in their own healthcare whether they need physical healing, whether they need psychological or emotional healing, or they need spiritual healing. PTSD, combat trauma, is a spiritual wound, and a spiritual wound requires a spiritual solution. We have great doctors in the VA and DOD that can help with people losing limbs and people having TBIs. We have incredible psychologists and counselors, but you can heal someone's body and you can heal someone's mind. But until you heal someone's soul, they're never truly going to be well. And we have seen this over the last 10 years at Mighty Oaks Foundation. Many other faith-based programs have seen the same success as we have. We've had third-party independent doctoral studies done that show we outperform clinical trials for people dealing with PTSD. This is a spiritual wound. It requires a spiritual solution. And the only way to heal someone's soul, I believe, and through the evidence that I've seen, is through a relationship with Christ. Now, is that for everyone? Obviously not. We're in a free country, and we don't have to force that on anyone. But our veterans and our active duty military deserve the choice to choose between faith programs and have them available to them. And much of the majority of our military leaders believe this. Trust me, because I've been doing this for 10 years in the trenches. They want this. They need it. We get requests, probably 20, 30 requests per month to go to active duty bases around the world and share this hope with their warriors, because they want them to continue to be combat ready, and they want them to be able to be resilient and bounce back from the hardships they face on the battlefield.
And this is why I wanted to talk to you. I wanted to hear your story. I mean, it's a great story, and it's a story of hope and redemption, and I love stories of redemption. But it also then overlaps with the work we do here at First Liberty, because we focus on 4 areas of culture, and one of those key emphasis, don't worry about the dog. I love dogs. One of those is the military, and we have won every case that we've ever entered to date, and we're actively working many cases in the military right now, working to make sure that those religious freedoms are protected, that people have the option, that they have the capability. I think I just lost you there. Oh, you're back. Yay. So we wanted to make sure that people know that the kind of work that you're doing, we think, is important to the lives of people who serve. And we think that it is something that should be made available. And again, if they choose to, if that's something they want to participate in. There's a phrase you use that I want you to unpack a little bit more. And it's, you even made it part of the title of a book. And it's spiritual resiliency. unpack that. You said it several times. I'd like you to explain what you mean by that. Give us a little more depth on that.
Yeah, so, and by the way, sorry about the dogs. It's a life of COVID working at home.
Oh, I don't mind at all. Yeah, it's real life, man.
The military has a model for resiliency, and they have four pillars of resiliency: mind, body, spirit, and social. And so, being an organization and being an individual that believes, in the spiritual redemption of people's lives and the strength that comes from a spiritual foundation, we believe it's important to define that. The military really defines what it means to be mentally tough. They really define what it means to be physically tough, and they do those two things well. Social is having a strong network of people that you work with in your work life and then in your personal life. Who do you let speak into your life? So these three areas are really defined by the DOD and the Veterans Administration. But the spiritual pillar keeps it very vague. It's kind of like, could be esprit de corps. It could be kind of universal approach. So we believe in putting some meat to that and understanding what it actually means. Let's stop tiptoeing around what spiritual foundation means and let some people define it. Maybe a Buddhist might define a spiritual foundation and a spiritual pillar different than me, but let them define it. And as a Christian, I want to define what that means to me. And so what the military has allowed us to do, both in the VA and mainly the DOD, has allowed us as an organization to do, is come in from our perspective and define what that means to us, what's that meant to me personally and my story, and how it could benefit the military by, again, making them more combat ready and then making them more resilient. Resiliency doesn't mean that you're not going to have hardships in life. I think sometimes people think, if I'm resilient, that means I'm never going to have hardships. What resiliency means is, in spite of those hardships, when those hardships come, and they will, in combat or in life, just in life in general, when those hardships come, like I said, they will for everyone.
Yeah.
Resiliency gives us the ability to transcend those hardships, make it another side, and if we fall on our face, understanding of where to bounce back to. And so we go in and able to find, hey, you need these four pillars, all four of them important: mind, body, spirit, social, be mentally tough, be physically tough, have a strong social network, but have a strong spiritual foundation too. I like to think of it as like a four-legged stool. And I explain it to the guys like this, like, hey, if you have a four-legged stool and each of those legs or your four pillars of resiliency, each of them need to be equally strong. On the surface, if they're all strong, right, they're gonna be able to hold a lot of weight. But if one of them's weak or if one of them's broken, and you put weight on it, it might be able to balance it. But when you put weight on it, it's going to come crashing down.
Yep.
It's important to have all four of those. And, reinforce, to be strong in all those areas. But we feel like we could really speak on the spiritual piece. I've written that book, Path to Resiliency. And I'm so blessed. Again, the Marine Corps lets us give it to these young recruits in boot camp. And it's pocket size so they can read it and be able to digest it while they're there. It's kind of cheating, though. If you know anything about Marine Corps boot camp, you can't have anything there. So it's kind of like doing prison ministry. They'll read anything you give them.
Hey, this crosses with headlines right now, because I was watching stories in the news recently about how they're wanting to look at what they're calling, I'm putting this in air quotes, extremism in the military. And they're wanting to more tightly define what it means to be an extremist in the military. And okay, we would all be against actual extremists, and we all have an idea what that means in our mind. But they're talking about people who are Christians, conservatives, people who believe in the Constitution and want to defend it. What are your thoughts on that? I'm sure you've been watching these stories as well.
Yeah, one, I think that's extremely, extremely dangerous talk. And it's a bunch of baloney, to be honest with you. I've been around the military since I was 17 years old. I've served with black people, Asian people, white people, people from downtown Detroit, people from backwoods Mississippi who shaved off their mullet to get in the Marine Corps. Like, when you go in the military, you don't care about any of that stuff. I don't care if you were rich, you were poor, you're black, you're white, none of that matters. I care about you, you care about me, we care about our mission, we serve with one another on the battlefield, and we love each other like brothers.
Yeah.
And if any racism surfaces in the military, and any like real derogatory like position towards one another happens in the military, it is squashed so quick amongst the ranks. It just doesn't exist. And so they bring this in, it's just you know, political posturing for an agenda, and it's disgusting that they would use our military to as a target for that. And it just is not true. I was just recently talking to a very prominent leader, and I don't want to say who it is, but a very prominent leader in the military who's in charge of one of the entire branches, who's a black man. He served his whole life, and he agreed with me that this was just completely outrageous, and this political posturing has no place in our military. Our military has one job to do, and it's to win wars, to keep the American people safe. And they need to keep this garbage and this and the rhetoric out of our military, because it's dangerous to our national security, especially when you step in and start trying to police that. I remember just recently they were trying to say how they needed to add a diversity in our special operations. What you need to add in our special operations is exactly what's always took place. The best and most qualified people who could pass the indoctrinations to get in. Because at the end of the day, when they have to do that job, it doesn't matter who they are, what color they are, where they came from. It matters that they could do the mission.
Very good. Hey, a lot of good thoughts in here, a lot to chew on today. Anything else you'd like to share before I let you go? Anything else you'd like to summarize as far as the importance of faith and service in the military?
I think it's just really important for the American people to recognize, because the news doesn't point it out, that we have been at war for 20 years. We have people that are retiring right now, retiring from the United States military with 20 years of active service, that never served one day in a peacetime military. We never have experienced that in our country before. Huh. So while we think about times like World War II and Vietnam and the things that our warriors suffered during those times, not to minimize or take away from them,
yeah.
Right now we are at a first time ever in our country that we have American war fighters who have been at war for 20 years. And that has taken a tremendous toll on our warriors. And this is a time where our country, who sent these warriors out, needs to embrace them coming home. And it's, it could be a thank you for your service, it could be a welcome home, but it needs to be making sure they're cared for when they come home, they have the right programs in place. In those programs they have in place, spiritual solutions need to be at the forefront of the table. The veterans are asking for it, they need it, it works, and it needs to be an option for them. And I'm not asking for just a plea for support to Mighty Oaks, but support programs like Mighty Oaks. We are all 501c3s. We work on we're able to provide these programs for free to these warriors and for us, including travel. And we need a grateful nation to get behind us and make it happen. Because in any administration, the VA and the DOD are not going to do it as good as the VSOs and nonprofits. They never will. I just ask that you understand that for our warriors, have a heart and compassion for them. They left your communities, and they're going back to the communities. Be there for them.
Chad Robichaux, man, it's great chatting with you. I really appreciate your story, appreciate your courage in sharing your story. I think that's going to be helpful for so many people. Thank you for making time for us, and thank you for your service. We're proud of you.
Thank you so much, Stuart.
All right. Hey, and First Liberty Institute, as we talked about, is dedicated to defending religious freedom across different areas of life. And one of the areas that we key in on is military. And we've won every case that we've ever brought in the military sphere. And as I mentioned, we are currently actively pursuing many others to make sure that the access to religious programs, as well as just the ability to be a Christian within the confines of the military, but to make sure that the religious expression is protected in the appropriate time and place. That's part of what we're working on right now today. If that's something that resonates with you, we invite you to join with us. On First Liberty Live, just look for the big red Give button and you can support our work here. And while you're at it, if you haven't already, remember to click on the blue Subscribe button as well. Our guest next week will be Colonel Alan West. If he's talking, it's interesting. We'll see you next week right here on FirstLibertyLive.com. Okay, and we are clear. Chad, that was awesome.